enhanced screening and reporting measures.
The new order would not affect people with green cards or those holding a valid visa. Dave?
John, Yemen's one of the six countries on that travel ban list, and the U.S. military kept up the attack on al-Qaeda terrorists there over the weekend. There have been now 30 airstrikes in Yemen since last week. North Korea's done it again.
The U.S. Strategic Command says North Korea launched ballistic missiles into the Sea of Japan at roughly 5:30 Eastern Time Sunday evening. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe says four ballistic missiles were launched, three splashed down inside Japan's exclusive economic zone. A U.S. defense official tells Fox the missiles were medium-range Scud missiles.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson of the Pentagon, the U.S. and our allies have condemned that test. Republicans in Congress do plan to investigate President Trump's claims he was wiretapped by the outgoing Obama administration.
It's really hard to cross-examine tweets. I need witnesses. I need documents.
Congressman Trey Gowdy on the House Intelligence Committee says there are only two legal ways to wiretap a criminal or an intel inquiry.
There's a paper trail. There's an application, there are warrants, all of which can be reviewed.
Democrats have demanded the president offer proof beyond his accusatory tweets. The U.S. Supreme Court has sidestepped a transgender bathroom controversy, sending a Virginia high school student's case back to a lower court after President Trump rolled back federal protections for transgender students. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
We first opened about 10 years ago. We're small, just a few of us, but it was exciting. I always dreamt of having my own business. It was kind of slow at first, but things started picking up. We had big plans. But in our wildest dreams, we never, never thought we'd have this much work. Yeah, with so many businesses caught off guard by the storm, Reed Waste Management has never been busier.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Jeffrey Shank, the host of Talk Money, is an individual who contributes to a weekly radio program on 1110 WCCM AM. He offers information designed to educate listeners in general terms about financial, mortgage, and estate planning services. He is not offering advice which is meant to be specific to any one listener's circumstances.
Good morning, Justin. I want to thank you for your hard work. The information is a big help, and I appreciate what you did.
Enjoy the show.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, that's great to know. Thank you for the information.
You're very welcome.
Okay, Jeff.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You're right on the money there, Jeff. How are you doing this morning?
Thank you.
Well, those are good questions. Hopefully I help.
Yes, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
You're going to hear stuff here that you don't hear anywhere else on radio.
And don't forget it.
Good morning and welcome to the Talk Money Show. My name is Jeffrey Shank. I'll be your host this morning. I'm a financial planner and the owner of Andover Advisory Group, a registered investment advisor, which I founded in 1996, based on the belief that a written financial plan is the key to reaching your goals. If you wouldn't build a house without first creating a blueprint, why wouldn't you have a plan for something as important as your retirement or paying for your kids' education? So if you're out there and you're getting ready to retire, your kids are on their way to college, and you're trying to figure out how to get that paid for, and you're just looking for some general financial help, we're
yeah, you
here.
Got a 20?
I'm sorry? What?
You got a 20?
A 20.
General financial help right there.
Yeah, sure, for the right price.
I'll give you a 20.
We can lend.
But 24,
lend.
Yeah.
We can lend.
Yeah. sorry.
That's okay. This show is all about you and your personal finances, so we'd like to hear from you today. If there's something on your mind that you'd like to ask us, please give us a call here. The number, 978-687-8005. Again, it's 978-687-8005. Or you can send us a text message. It's 97. Is the texting service
texting
working?
Texting works. Phone works. 978-687-8005 or text us at 978-712-8005. And for listeners tuning in to hear Jeff, we're having all kinds of automation problems here at the station. So,
but we're on the air, right?
That's well, we're on thing. The air. We're on the air, baby, yeah.
New FM signal, 98.9 on the FM.
Yeah, switch on over. Set a preset.
Yeah, I've been listening to that all weekend. I've been in the car.
Heavy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some interesting content on the weekend.
I heard some last Saturday night.
I learned all about...
Drobits?
All about auto lubrication. Engine lubrication.
Engine lubrication.
Yes.
See, the week before it was Drobits. Yeah.
And there was this there's a show. It was an auto show. And it was really actually very interesting because there was a gentleman from... the host was from Massachusetts, has moved to Florida, so he's doing the show from Florida.
Yep.
And not to get too far off track here, but he was talking to a gentleman who owns a company that transports these antique autos and other vehicles for people who are looking to move it from a, you know, A to B.
Right.
And one of his customers is Jay Leno. Because company is from Massachusetts,
yep.
And so you can just imagine, you know, the amount of business he's getting from Jay, moving his cars around the country, buying and selling, right?
Jay's working again, by the way.
Doing what? Well, he was
Have
on CNBC. He had that Jay's Leno's Garage or something. Is there something else he's doing?
He's got a recurring role. Have you ever seen the situation comedy Last Man Standing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see him on that all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what you meant by working?
Yeah. That's working.
It is. It was actually pretty funny because when his first appearance.
Yeah.
Did you see that? Did you see that episode? His
Probably,
first appearance.
Yeah. Yeah.
They made a couple of comments about. I forget.
They
I,
always.
I forget.
They always
forget,
do references.
They made some references. Yeah, they made some references to his comedic talent, and
yep.
They gave each other a couple of.
Yeah, and they make references to the old series, and it's
it's
Tool Time. And
yeah, it's one of my
favorite
daughter
shows. Says they're writing me.
One of my favorite shows, but Dish is having a dispute with the ABC affiliate, and so it's right now blacked out, so I can't get any ABC shows live.
That's horrible.
On my my Dish network, so I have to try to get them over the air.
My daughter put it in front of me because they said they're writing me. Tim's character is me.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
Dad, that's you. Yeah, kind of is.
Yeah, he's that's a great show. I love it,
yep.
And we actually look forward to it every Friday night, and I tape it
yep.
So that if I miss it, I can watch it.
All right. What kind of money are we making today?
Say again.
What kind of money are we making today?
So you know, I thought we'd talk a little bit about where the market is right now, and mm-hmm. You know, we've have mentioned several times over the last couple of months this Trump effect and what's going on. And, you know, I track the indexes from the beginning of the year.
Right.
And we, you know, we just, you know, depending on how it goes, we'll make a comment. But I said, you know, I really should be tracking this Trump rally.
Tracking what way now?
Well, just to see how far we've come,
yeah.
How, you know, how this rally is performing.
Where would you start, though? Because I suggest you start at the 800 points down on November 7th, or the early hours
well, I don't know
of,
that,
of
I don't
November
know that
9th.
It actually, I don't know that it was actually 800
futures.
Points down. The futures
yeah.
were down, but I don't, yeah, I don't think it. The market actually got that
Because I remember that moment
that
quite clearly. No, it didn't, actually. Actually, it rallied the next day, didn't it?
I don't remember what the close was, but so you're asking me where I'm tracking it from. I'm tracking
the
close on Election Day.
On Election Day. Okay, good.
So yeah. from the close on Election Day
right.
until today.
So you're including the president-elect time.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, just checking.
Right. Yeah.
Don't get offended.
So if we look at where we've come since... That day, so November, I'm going to say it was November 8th, I think.
November
depending 8th. On which index you're looking at, the Dow was up the most, 14.5%
wow.
since Election Day.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's healthy. I mean, well, A healthy gain is what I meant to say.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's a year's worth of returns.
2 years' worth of returns.
Well, in recent years,
on average over the last, 30-some odd years?
Yeah, so...
Hasn't it averaged about a little over 6%?
Over the last 30 years? Over the last 30 years, I couldn't comment because I don't know for sure. That wouldn't be unreasonable, I don't think.
For some reason. Yeah.
Over the last 30 years, so you're going back to...
6.4 or 6.6?
You're going back to 86.
On average, not...
I would think that would be low, depending on which index you're looking at, but you could be right. You could be right. There's a couple of crashes in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The S&P 500, which is a broader measure of the market, still large company stocks in there. It's up over 11%, 11.4 roughly. And the NASDAQ is up only 9% during that time period. And so when you consider the sectors of the economy where the policies of a Trump administration might be beneficial.
Yeah.
If you look at the Dow as an example, just 30 companies in there, but those are the blue chip companies.
Right.
And
large companies.
Well, large companies and heavy into, like, the industrial areas of the of the economy. And so you would think that, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? That those companies, that those parts of the economy would be up a little bit more than others. And the NASDAQ, which is heavily into technology.
Yeah, don't stop there, though. Follow that up. Why would those companies... necessarily be up. Yeah.
Okay, good point. So what Trump has promised is bringing...
corporate tax reform.
Well, corporate tax reform, but that should benefit everybody.
Yeah.
To a large degree. Trying to bring back business to the U.S., where a lot of these companies are based, and although they might be global, they're if they can...
Bringing business back to the U.S. in terms of, are we talking tariff policy, things like that?
Who knows how that's all going to work. Okay. I'm not suggesting that this is a good thing. I'm saying promises that are being made would benefit, I think, those companies that are in that particular index. And I guess that's my point.
Yeah, but has it gone beyond we're going to make American business great again? Tax reform is part of a specific policy initiative. Tariffs have been talked about. Are there other specific policy initiatives, or is it just Trump saying we're going to make American business great again?
Well, coal, the coal industry.
No, well,
okay, reducing regulations to allow companies to do more business. The suggestion that if you're going to get a government contract, you're going to use U.S.-based businesses, U.S.-based products.
There you go.
For example, the pipelines. He said that if we're going to allow you to build a pipeline, you have to use U.S. steel, not the company.
Yeah.
Manufactured here in the United States.
What?
U.S. steel.
The company. Okay.
The company. Right.
Steel made in the United States. So when they're building something in California, they're not bringing in Chinese steel.
Right. Well,
what was that project that years ago they were talking about huge project that they were importing Chinese steel for. Everyone was up in arms. That's a good policy. I have no problem with that policy. Except it's going to be more expensive for everybody.
Well, yeah. So is that a good thing?
Well, it depends.
Depends on what?
Okay, here's...
So
discussion here?
Say again?
Can we have an economic discussion here that's similar?
Sure.
People complaining about Trump's proposal or his thoughts that he wants to expand the military.
Okay.
And everyone's up in arms about military spending. And to my thinking,
what do you mean everybody?
Everybody.
There's a lot. There's
people,
resistance. There's
the people
resistance
burning
by
the cities and towns
to,
and breaking windows and beating
so
up other people.
There's a resistance to a particular group of people to building up the military. Generally speaking, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
The people who are breaking windows.
But
and
I don't think that everybody
buildings.
Is resistant to that.
Right.
Just
okay.
say
right, so I misused
okay.
the word.
All right.
My argument is where does military spending get spent? I asked the people in Bath, Maine. Asked the people in Norfolk, Virginia. Asked the people who work for Raytheon. Military spending is it's. The people who are complaining about military spending are the people who should love it because it's a liberal program. It takes money into the federal government and redistributes it.
Agreed.
It's their program. It's the mother of their programs. It's
Agreed.
The poster child of their programs. Why do they hate it so much?
That's not to say that all government spending is going to be spent here in the United States, but when you're talking about military application, you're talking about military hardware, a lot of that manufacturing is being done at a highly classified level, and therefore you really can't necessarily be outsourcing to other countries
right.
those
right.
jobs.
Government contracts
so, right.
fund
yeah.
families that buy houses, that pay property taxes, well, that build roads, that fund schools, that do all the economic business.
Specifically the military spending part of the budget.
Yeah, well, the military is a constitutional function of the federal government, so
right.
I don't have money.
Yeah.
I don't have
no,
problems.
I don't have
spending.
Problem with it at all. And we probably have,
and by the way,
in the last several years, not spent enough on shoring up our military capability.
And by the way, I don't even have a problem with the military spending and building obsolete weapon systems. You know, it's like there's more to military spending than the military. It's part of the economic fabric of the United States right now. And by the way, I don't want
so
to...
So make work programs?
Not specifically make work, but listen, if the government wants to continue a program with Raytheon that might not necessarily be useful by the time it actually hits the field...
You have no problem with that?
I have a little
no
problem with
it, okay.
But I have more problems with other types of spending than that.
All right.
Do I want to take food out of the Raytheon family's mouths? Not necessarily.
Okay. Well,
I know. I understand, and you're a really practical guy, and I understand where the impracticality
it's not even,
of
no,
that.
No, it's not even practical
you.
Versus impractical. It's
yeah.
just that's not the way the economy works. And then when you start to waste money, as you just suggested,
and the military
then,
does waste money. But, yeah.
Well, government inherently is wasteful. Government spending inherently is wasteful just because of the way it works.
But in the military, so, they're spending it on a constitutional function of the government.
Right.
I just, so
right.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, it's
not
okay,
so much okay, but it's
gotcha.
It's acceptable.
Yeah.
It's acceptable.
Right.
Okay. So when you start to say we're going to spend this money this way because we don't want to take the jobs away from people at Raytheon, then you are, in effect, ruining the economy.
Okay. I'm not proposing you actually say that or do that. I'm proposing
okay.
if it happens from time to time, I don't think it's the worst
it's
thing in the
world. It's not the
world.
End of the world.
Right.
Okay. All right.
As
we
opposed
can agree
to
on
spending
that.
Social Security
on
benefits
that.
On dead people.
But so,
that's a problem to me.
So those policies that the Trump administration
yeah.
is proposing, that they're talking about, that they're pushing, would help those companies more so than
right.
The ones that are in the Dow Industrials average versus the broader market. And when you take a look at the NASDAQ as an example, where there's a lot of technology companies in that
yeah.
particular index, that hasn't performed as well, up only 9% compared to almost 15% for the Dow, which makes a lot of sense,
right.
and adds credence to the theory that this is all or a lot of what we've seen in the markets since November has a lot to do with the Trump administration.
Yeah,
the Trump effect. There's no getting around it. There's no getting away from it.
Or the impression of what the Trump administration is going to be or do.
Right.
Yeah.
Speculation that, you know, this,
right,
right, all these things are going to benefit the these companies and these businesses and the markets are responding.
Right.
So the question here is there a risk at these levels to take into consideration? Because if
the current level of the market.
I'm sorry?
The current levels of the market?
Yes, current levels of the market.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, is there a downside risk?
You can tell me if I'm wrong.
There's always a downside risk, but is there more so now than there was just in November because it's rallied to such a degree? Based on speculation, rhetoric versus reality.
Well, I'm no economist, but I'm not totally unfamiliar with analysis.
Yeah.
And when the market is at the highest it's ever been, the downside risk is considerable.
Okay.
That's a basic economic principle.
I agree with you. I guess that then the question, let me refine it a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that particular risk? And can we count on the administration to come through and deliver on these promises? And when things happen like this weekend,
mm-hmm.
Where the president tweets out this statement of fact, right? And
it creates
all these questions and all these responses, and just creates this huge distraction from the work that they should be doing, and does, in my opinion, does chew up some political capital that the president has.
We're talking about the wiretapping comment.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't want to get specific about it, but I mean,
well, no, I didn't know if I missed a policy tweet.
No. Yeah, the wiretapping comment.
Well, unfortunately for the president, the war is occurring on several fronts here. There's a policy front, there's a political front, there's a Twitter front. And he's trying to wage war on all three fronts, that's all.
There's a Twitter front? He's created the Twitter front.
Oh, no, he didn't create Twitter. He's just a child of Twitter. Let the man have some fun. Blow off some steam.
So in my opinion, it becomes increasingly difficult with all these distractions for him to actually make this make all these things happen, because he has to be there are a lot of competing ideas.
Some presidents golf. Some presidents go on Twitter. Whatever they do in their free time, they need the downtime, right?
There's a lot of competing opinions in Congress. And so he needs Congress to agree on certain things in order to make a lot of this stuff happen, right? And so he has to show leadership in order to, in my opinion, to make that happen. And so if the Republican Party is questioning their leader, then that creates this opportunity for people to say, wait a second, well, I'm not on board with this, and because I'm looking out for my political future, and so here's what I'm willing to sign on to.
Can I present an alternative scenario for that?
Yes, absolutely.
You're talking about the Republican leadership that he needs for votes to enact policy following him as a leader.
I think that's what I said, but I would suggest
that the Republican Party is never going to follow Trump as a leader unless he wins the battle on the Twitter front. In other words, they don't follow Trump because of Trump. They follow Trump because of what they think or don't, based on what they think the reaction is going to be from their constituents.
All right. So let's...
The president won an election this way. He's built a base this way. He's built political power in a response this way.
I will stipulate that is exactly what has to happen. So is what he did over the weekend going to achieve that goal?
Well, wouldn't you put this under the category of red meat for the base? Which all politicians do. The people who supported the president, the people who voted for the president and elected the president are going to love that. They're going to they love that he's standing up. They love that he's out on Twitter saying the things that need to be said. They're going to continue to support him.
Until...
What's going to happen is...
Until it's proven that is a totally false statement.
We'll see, but there have been a lot of false statements made that didn't erode the support of the president at the time. If you like your doctor, you can keep him.
Okay. Actually, no. It did erode his support.
No.
Oh, yes.
No. The people who were on that bandwagon never left that bandwagon, no matter what was said.
Until it became clear that it was a lie.
I mean, those people are still on the bandwagon. They're still fighting for Obamacare.
That's not the same as recognizing that they couldn't keep their doctor. And the reality was they couldn't keep their doctor. Even those people that were supporting him eventually said, you know what, that's not the way it's working out.
Yeah.
And became disappointed that they couldn't keep their doctor.
Yeah.
I mean, not just that particular statement, but Obamacare in general. It wasn't the promises that were made weren't eventually delivered.
Right.
And so I don't believe that the base will continue to support someone who is making blatantly false statements off the cuff, just throwing it out. It's just one man's opinion.
I don't know, the other base did. After repeated blatantly false statements that, by the way, we knew were false at the time he said them.
We did. But those who support him ignored it.
A congressman yelled at a joint session of Congress, "You lie," and he was absolutely right because he was lying at the time. Everyone knew he was lying at the time.
Just bad form, that's all.
Yeah, but
yeah.
The point is he lied. He blatantly lied. He knowingly lied, and everybody knew he lied when he said it.
So
yeah.
My point here is we're in a market.
You're worried because he doesn't have the support to follow
through. We're in a market that is becoming increasingly dependent on the ability of the Trump administration to deliver on certain things, and I'm not convinced at this point that they're going to be able to do that.
Okay.
And so that creates a level of risk that you need to be aware of.
Sure.
And I would be recommending that you review your portfolio. If you've been fully invested and you've made some money, time to make some changes.
Take some winnings off the
table.
No one ever
lost money taking a profit.
14% in some sectors.
Exactly. Depending on which index you're looking at and how you invested it.
In normal circumstances, in vanilla circumstances, apart from the situation you're describing here, if you told somebody in a vacuum, at certain point next year you're going to be 14% up.
Yeah.
The person would probably start thinking, all right, I'm going to capture some of that.
I'm
going to pocket some of that.
Right. Yeah. At the very least, I mean, if you're still confident that you know the market's going to continue to rally from this point forward, at the very least, I would be looking at doing some rebalancing.
Yeah.
So if you've taken a balanced approach, and you have a diversified portfolio in various asset classes, chances are those stock market positions have grown to the point where they might be out of balance. And so what you would do is you would just rebalance the overall portfolio, taking some money out of the stock market, putting it into other asset classes. But I would also be cautious about taking that money out and putting it into the bond market at this point in time, because the Federal Reserve is talking about raising interest rates. And
can I ask you some specifics about what that might look at like?
Well, for example,
you identified a couple different sectors here that were up different percentage points.
Yeah.
So it would seem to me that one of the ways you might do that is to take to withdraw from some of the markets that are seeing a big balloon because of the speculation policy and reposition them in some
rotate
of the ones
out
that haven't seen.
Yeah, that's sector rotation. Rotate out of certain sectors into others. We don't necessarily do that. For clients, but there are money managers out there that we work with that can help us to do that. Yeah.
Because some sectors have more helium than others, right?
Yeah.
Is that the way to put this?
Yeah.
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 So.
And so that would be one way to do it within that. But I'm also talking about asset classes that aren't correlated with the stock market.
Oh, I see. Yep.
And then maybe some alternative asset classes that you haven't even invested in at this point might be a good way to look to rebalance. I was listening actually to a gentleman this morning on one of the financial shows who said, you know, what we're doing right now, he said, is that we're looking at those asset classes where the Trump administration, no matter what happens, is probably going to be very friendly to. And those are the asset classes that you probably should be considering anyway. Maybe not, you know, I wouldn't recommend it, but it's considering. So, for example, can you imagine that the that a President Trump would do anything to affect negatively the real estate market?
No. Yeah.
So there's one potential asset class that I would consider an alternative to the traditional stock and bond asset class that you, if it's not represented in your portfolio, something to take a look at.
And that's an asset class that's not, that's price right now isn't dependent on speculation and policy.
Well, I think maybe to some degree it is.
I mean, just overall, the overall economic optimism maybe, but in other words, they're not expecting a specific policy aimed at them, like some of the other companies.
Other than tax reform,
yeah.
Perhaps. But again, the belief that it's unlikely that a Trump administration would do something that they thought would be detrimental to real estate, the real estate market.
Yeah, he's a real estate friendly individual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't forget the Trump holdings, the Trump fortune, it was really based on real estate.
Right.
And even though he may have, and I don't even know the details, I don't even know what's been made public, that he's actually stepped away from those businesses. They say that he has. I don't think I've ever seen a report that describes specifically how that's all working, but
I'm guessing there's still some numbers on his speed dial.
Well, at the very yeah. least, his family is still going to benefit from those holdings.
Yep.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So would
he's got a personal stake.
He's got a personal stake, yeah. Even though it may not be direct.
Well, we would hope that every president has a personal stake in America. We would hope.
We would hope.
Yeah.
It's unlikely that he would make some sort of move that would be detrimental to the real estate market, specifically commercial real estate. So that might be an asset class that you might want to take a look at, just if it's not in your portfolio right now, as something to consider.
Right. I'm guessing he's going to be more energy friendly. If not specific positive policy.
Well, there you go. That's a good point.
Continuously negative policy.
So a particular sector that you might want to be looking at, it might be that the oil and gas sector. Mm-hmm. That might be something to consider, because everything that he's done so far has, the executive orders anyway, have been friendly to those businesses, specifically U.S.-based energy companies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the kind of thing that I would recommend that you be looking at in your overall portfolio to diversify at this point in time, to kind of reduce some of that risk. Because again, if specifically in terms of policies, if the tax reform proposals do not become a reality this year,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to say by the summer, that could have a very negative effect.
At the point where the companies are less sure tax reform is actually going to happen.
Correct.
If it gets to that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the speculation, I think, is based on the assumption that that corporate tax reform specifically is going to add to companies' bottom lines in savings and allow them to invest more money and grow a little bit faster. And if that doesn't happen, that could have an immediate negative effect.
Has there been any kind of handicapping of what the Republican base? There's no specific tax reform policy to evaluate yet, is there?
Tax reform legislation
corporate
proposed?
Corporate tax reform, yeah.
Corporate tax reform? Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there. But
I mean, there isn't one to actually vote on and debate. I mean, there's always a bunch of proposals.
Is there anything that is concrete that's on the floor? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I mean, there's a bunch of bills that I think they've introduced in the past, maybe never voted on or did vote on and couldn't get passed. But I don't think there's anything right now going through Congress that we could look at and say, okay, fine, here are the specifics and here's the timeline for getting it done.
Right.
But a lot of talk right now and a lot of disagreement among even Republicans as to how this should all work. And that's my point.
Yeah.
Right. So if this doesn't happen this year, and we don't, now the administration is saying, oh yeah, we're gonna be able to do this. In fact, the new Treasury Secretary, I believe, is that former Goldman Sachs guy?
Yeah. I can't come up with his name right now.
Is it Mnuchin? Is that him?
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah. He is saying August. He's saying August. Very specifically, August. So, again, that doesn't happen by August. What are we looking at? Not to mention the fact that the Federal Reserve is going to meet this month, and the chairperson of the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, she got chatty.
Yeah. And said glowing things about the economy and the potential for a rate rise at the next meeting. And so we start to see interest rates get ratcheted up. Well, we know that that's going to have an immediate negative effect on the bond market, right?
Right.
And again, could be another headwind for stocks, because up until now, people said, "Well, I'll put my money in the stock market because I'm getting a true 3% dividend. I can only get 1% if I put it in the bank. Right. I'm crazy not to invest in the stock market, right?"
Yeah. Yeah.
So when those safer investments become more attractive in terms of yield, or start to approach parity,
right,
in terms of yield, then yeah, that's going to put some pressure on stocks.
Yeah, it's a balance of risk, right? Versus it's always a balance of risk versus yield, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another piece of information that came out last week we should mention is that they did another estimate on GDP for the fourth quarter of last year, and it pretty much came in the same as the first estimate,
1.9%.
That's an annual growth rate.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still looking at what I would call some...
Am I correct that the former president is the first one never to post the 3%?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I thought I read
it. It's very possible.
I thought I read that somewhere.
First administration that didn't oversee an economy growing at more than 3%, is that what you're saying? In their entire 8-year period.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe we've ever seen... We've seen some data points that indicated potentially a 3% growth rate, and I remember one even that approached 4% at some point. But when you accumulated them over the course of a 12-month period and got the real data, I don't think we've ever gone over 3% in an 8-year period. I could be wrong.
And he got a head start because the economy was pared back at the beginning of this.
So you think it would have? Yeah. So typically, what happens when you have that kind of recession? You have a
big growth.
Yeah, at least a couple of years later, in order to get back to where you were before.
Right, yeah.
And you know what? The thing I've been thinking about, and I think this is lost on most people, and I think it's because of the distractions of the new administration and the excitement around a Trump presidency.
Excitement.
Yeah.
Good word. There's a lot of excitement.
So we've got $20 trillion. Of total debt,
yeah.
The U.S. government, right? We owe $20 trillion.
Right.
I don't know how that works out per capita or per family, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's just...
Carload of money.
I mean, that has just grown incredibly in the 8 years of the Obama administration.
$9 trillion of it. It doubled it.
Almost doubled it. Yeah, yeah. I think so. Yeah. Yeah. So do you realize that as a percentage of... the overall economy, it's over 100%
of the overall 20 trillion. Yeah, the annual, it's about 15 trillion.
We're at 18.
18, yeah.
We're at 18 trillion.
Wow.
So when you look back at history.
So you people at home, think of how much you make in a year. You owe more than you.
You owe more than you make.
Yeah.
Right, in total, total debt.
Yep.
Per person to the to various lenders, a lot of those folks being foreign investors.
Yeah.
So that's just, if you look back on history, and that is just a very, it's happened before, but typically I think the last time it happened was World War II.
Yeah. Well, World War II was costly.
Right.
Yeah.
What's our excuse?
What's our excuse now?
Yeah. What's our excuse now?
Buying votes is costly.
Well,
and to win an election.
And and Trump is talking about maybe some more deficit spending to
Well, where are we in annual deficit? We're above below $500 billion, right?
Yeah, but they're talking.
The
proposals that are coming out suggest that maybe, you know, that could be $1 trillion in a year.
Mm. Yeah, we've been there. Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
No. No, it's not. And if interest, and here's the key, if interest rates do start to rise, that's going to be a part of the budget that we can't control.
Isn't the problem here, and if I can equate it to a household's income again, as we did before, there are certain fixed costs for personal finances. For example, your mortgage is X amount.
Right.
Your insurance is X amount.
Right.
Eating it is X amount.
Right.
Right? There is stuff that you can't change. So if once those base costs become a large percentage of your income, you're going to end up in deficit, you know, with all the other costs. This is where we are as a country right now. Huh? There are so many fixed costs that it's... Could we run this country at level, you know, with zero deficit?
With all these years with interest rates as low as they've been, I never understood why the government wouldn't refinance some of that debt long-term.
Yeah.
You know, issue some 30-year bonds at 4 or 5% so we wouldn't have to worry about it.
The government got those letters for 0% interest credit cards, right?
They did.
Should have done some work.
They should
have
done some work. Exactly.
Roll that over. Roll that $20 trillion over.
Well, actually, but you know what? That's exactly what they did do.
Yeah.
They took advantage of those offers and refinanced the debt at low interest rates. Why? Because that gave them more money to spend on other stuff.
Right.
So they weren't taking a long-term view. They were looking at a short-term view. And what's the problem with those credit card offers? They're only for 6 months. It's 0% for 6 months. What do you do at the end of 6 months? Now you're up to 21%. That's not going to happen with the federal debt.
So you never roll it over and take that money and buy other stuff. You roll it over and take that money and pay off the high-interest debt.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Refinance some of the debt that we have in order to fix those costs long-term. But the reason why they didn't do it is because then they'd have to be spending more money on interest today voluntarily.
Yeah.
And not have that money available to do other stuff with it.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why they didn't do it.
Yeah.
And now we're at a point where interest rates are starting to rise, and that opportunity may have passed us by. I think there still is an opportunity to do that, but I doubt very much that the Trump administration is even going to recommend or suggest that we do anything like that. So we're at $20 trillion. They're talking about spending more money. We're at over 100% of GDP right now in terms of overall debt. And that doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon. And the supporters of the current proposed policies of lower taxes and higher spending at the same time,
just as bad a combination
as our right are saying, oh, how we're going to deal with that is with additional growth. I'm not so sure that the math works in that particular case, and here's the reason why. We've talked about it on the show before, the Laffer curve.
Yes.
So Laffer was an economist that worked in the Reagan administration, and he came up with the Laffer curve as it applied to tax policy.
Yes.
And so
the Laffer curve applies everywhere, but
yeah,
it's a life principle.
It's a life principle, right?
Yeah.
And so what he said was, there's this. He put out the theory that there's an optimum point.
Right.
At which the level of taxes would actually produce more revenue.
Right.
And so...
Or in other words, there's a point of diminishing returns on tax rate.
Point of diminishing returns, exactly.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, if your tax rate is zero, how much tax revenue are you going to take in?
Zero.
Zero. If you're... tax rate is 100%, how much revenue you're going to take in?
Zero.
You might get some. You might get some,
yeah,
but
for a while.
For a while, right? Yeah. You're going to create a black market, essentially.
Yeah.
Right. And so what he said is that there's this sweet spot where if you raise the rate above a certain level, it starts to diminish the amount of revenue you take in.
Right.
And so the question I have when people talk about, oh, if we lower taxes, we'll get revenue. It's proven. We lower taxes. Well, if you lower it to zero, you're not going to get any more tax revenue. Right, exactly.
Right.
And let me just say that, based on my experience, we're at a point right now where at the personal level anyway, I'm not saying anything about the corporate level, but the personal level, we're at probably the lowest effective tax rates we've been in 50 years.
Especially when you consider only half of us are paying taxes.
Lowest effective tax rate. So my question is, if you lower the personal effective rate, personal at the personal income tax level, or at the personal level, are you actually going to generate more revenue?
This you have to determine.
Right. Well, I don't know the answer to that question, but again, I'm looking at it from a practical point of view, in that I see people's personal tax situation, and I know that we're at the lowest, some of the lowest effective tax rates,
right,
that we've had in 50 plus years.
You have to find out where you are on the curve, because I've gone through this,
right,
extensively.
Yep.
Everyone complained about the Bush tax cuts, but
yep,
3 years after the Bush tax cuts, the second round, because the first round really didn't do anything to the economy, second round of tax cuts, 3 years afterwards, we had a 24% increase in tax revenue.
Right.
After the tax cuts. That was a point on the Laffer curve where diminishing taxes actually created more return. We saw it on the corporate level, did we not, in the Clinton administration with Newt Gingrich or capital gains. We cut capital gains taxes, and that produced more tax revenue. It has happened in the past, but there's a point on the curve where lowering taxes doesn't always return more revenue, and that's what you think
that's
we
my,
might be
that's
at that
my,
point.
That's yeah. my point.
Yeah.
I don't know where we, as you said, I don't know where we are on the curve.
Yeah.
I can't tell you for sure. That's not my expertise. But I do know, again, that we're at one of the lowest effective tax rates, personal.
Let me ask you a simple
level.
Question. Do you think if there was a lowering, and probably not, a reasonable lowering of personal income tax and a lowering of the corporate tax rate, would business not increase in this country?
Corporate income tax rate, I think. Well, actually, we need total reform of the system. That's what I would say.
Absolutely.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're still going
to
nibble around the edges. But if there were some things that they could do, immediately, to lower taxes and actually spur economic growth, it would be some of these taxes that were created as a result of Obamacare.
Yeah.
The additional tax on investment income, the so-called Medicare tax.
Right.
If you were to get rid of that, that would definitely be helpful. If you lowered the additional tax for people that are making over a certain amount of money, a couple hundred thousand dollars, and there's a
right.
An additional tax, Social Security tax added to those folks as well.
Right.
So if you started getting rid of some of these things, that would definitely be helpful. But that's going to be a hard sell.
Why is it a hard sell?
Yeah.
Because it's tax breaks for the rich.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Which don't play.
Right. So the only way they're going to get that done is if they do something that for everybody else.
It's helpful in a practical sense. It's helpful, but it doesn't play, so politicians won't do it. It's
right.
It's the Social Security Act,
right, exactly,
all over again.
Right.
But you can't. I don't believe you can do this on either side of the ball. In other words, you can't just do tax reform and fix this problem. You have to reform spending.
I agree.
On the output end and on the input end.
I agree.
We are out of control.
It's definitely a heavy lift. But
yeah.
Isn't that why we voted for and put Trump in office? He's the guy to do it. He's the guy.
I don't know why you voted for him and put him in. I know why I voted for him and put him in. But and you didn't vote
because,
for him.
He's the business guy. He's the leader. He's the high level CEO that can get these things done.
But you
right?
also
so
well,
let's do it. I say let's do it.
Yes, but you also
let's
understand that the president doesn't generate legislation, right?
Well, no, he's the CEO. He's the guy that's gonna. He's the guy that's gonna come up with the plans and convince everybody that this is the right way to go. And
the only time that happens is in the cult-like atmosphere of the previous administration. That's the only time that the president legislates. The president doesn't legislate by constitutional.
So here's my point. Here's my problem. Here's my problem. My problem then is, or I think. Yeah. The important thing to say here
stop
is...
Stop upsetting the GOP base because you're going to need them to get policy done. That's what you're saying.
Nah, well, yeah, that's probably not such a bad idea, but no.
Don't heat up the snowflakes on the Republican side.
There's the risk in the market. What you just said, there's the risk in the market, right?
Yep.
That these things won't get done because of how government functions. Especially when conservatives are in control.
No, no. I have a problem with that statement.
No, because what you suggested.
Because
you
liberals are
it.
Cult-like, and they will work as a bloc,
right.
And
exactly.
GOP won't.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a leader who's not necessarily in the fold of the GOP.
Yeah. So there's a risk. And so here's the other thing I want to mention. Okay?
That's all fair.
I'm going to call this the math of losses.
Ooh, I like this.
The math of losses.
Massive losses.
Yeah. Okay. So we had this terrific run up. We've had a 8 years of a bull market.
Yeah. Yeah, because you were hurting people
like
bulls into the market.
Without a lot of pauses. Right? A lot of pauses. Right? And so we're at this level. And you're wondering, geez, Jeff, why would I... Why would I even consider getting out of the market right now?
It's
why
going
would
great,
I consider
Jeff.
Doing
it's
any
going great, yeah.
Right?
Record highs. Record high after record high after record high.
I've seen a couple of crashes in my career.
Yeah.
I can see I've seen what it can do.
Yeah.
Okay. Not only to individuals but also the economy. And so here's the thing. If you lose 25% of the value of your investments due to market declines,
right.
25%. You need more than 25% growth
to get
just to get even, right?
Yeah.
How much?
I have become familiar with that formula at a couple points, but I don't have it in my head.
33%. So 33%. In order just to get back even, you got to have a 33% gain.
Right.
If you lose 25%. If you lose 40%.
Oof. Hello,
which was not, by the way, and we have short memories.
Yeah. Not that long ago.
Not that long ago, in 2008, 2009, we saw those kinds of declines.
At just about this point in the previous president's first year.
Good point.
Yeah.
It was all starting to materialize before he took office.
Right.
You have to get even, Lou, to get even, you got to get 67% positive return just to get even.
Wow.
And if you have a 50% loss, the math is really easy on this one.
You need 100%?
You need 100%.
Wow. Yeah. So losses are devastating.
So if you
gains
got,
are good, losses are devastating.
And they're so difficult to recover from. You really need time. Now, if you're young and you've got, 40 years to recover, not such a big deal. But if you're a baby boomer and you're getting close to retirement or you're already retired and you're relying on those investments, why would you at this point in time?
And didn't we find in 2008 that when you get losses of that size, oftentimes you're forced into tapping into your principal?
If you're relying on those investments for income, and right, you have those kinds of losses.
So you're compounding that. You have to make those gains have to be even bigger.
Because you have less principal. Because of the withdrawals. So the smart thing to do would be to stop the withdrawals at that point. If you did suffer those kinds of losses in the short term,
I mean, that was the situation, right? A lot of people could
reduce the withdrawals. Anyway.
A lot of people who sat out 2008 and could last through the 6 years of recovery.
Yeah.
They did all right. They got whole again eventually, but a lot of people just couldn't sit out that long, couldn't leave that stuff. If I can oversimplify this as a stupid man would, you're talking risk-reward.
Yes.
Yeah. The risk-reward ratio.
Right.
And people tend to underestimate the risk of loss. They under, tend to underestimate the impact of loss.
Right. If there was any time in the last 8 years to really get serious about taking some money off the table and reducing risk, I think now is definitely the time. And again, you've benefited from this Trump rally. I mean, think about it. We have the the specter of rising interest rates. Mm-hmm. We've got a $20 trillion debt that's greater than GDP. GDP is only growing at 2%. We've got earnings multiples in the market that are approaching all-time highs.
Yeah.
And so it's very possible that we've reached a level here that just isn't really sustainable, and it is all based on the expectation that something is going to come out of this, come from government that's going to save the day.
The rubber band is being stretched.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, I'm guessing you can shift asset classes so that you can minimize your risk, but you can also take some growth as well. It's not like you're checking out totally, right? So you bet you're not burying it in coffee cans in the backyard.
So the problem is, what's the alternative? The alternative is to put your money in the bank. I'm not saying that we're going to see banking failures here. That's not what I'm talking about. Yeah. I hope I'm not being too extreme with my commentary here. But people tend to
equate getting out of the market or reducing the market or redistributing from the market. People tend to think of that as eliminating risk, and when they hear eliminating risk, they say, I can't make any money. If I don't risk, I can't.
Well, right now, given the current interest rate environment, that's essentially true.
Yeah.
Right.
But there are degrees of risk, right?
Well, yeah, and there are alternatives. There are alternatives, and the best approach would be a highly diversified portfolio. And again, consider asset classes that maybe are not in your portfolio right now, things that aren't correlated. And here's the key: asset classes that are not correlated with the traditional stock and bond asset class.
All right, so people should learn about some of these alternatives and learn about how it works on their particular portfolio. Just come in and talk to you, right?
Yes.
Talk about what some of these possibilities are.
Yeah. Yeah. The best way to reach me after the show, and if you'd like, you can take advantage of our complimentary, no obligation, initial consultation, where we can talk about some of these things. It is tax time, as you mentioned, Lou. A good thing to do at this time of year is to review your prior income tax returns. And so we'd be happy to do that as part of that initial consultation. Just give me a call at the office. It's 978-691-5005. Again, 978-691-5005.
And that's a good place to start, right? Because that's like a financial blood panel. Let's just see where you are. Taxes are a good...
Financial what?
A financial blood panel.
What's a blood panel?
You go to the doctor, you have your blood done. You're just looking for various levels and how you're doing. General health. Yeah, a first screening, just the first look.
Initial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
X-ray, a financial x-ray, a financial CAT scan.
Blood panel. There's another word for it. I've never heard the term blood panel, but I understand what you're saying. In fact, they can take a drop of blood from you these days, and they can pretty much tell you exactly how healthy you are or how sick you might be. Yeah, exactly. That's a great way to put it.
And point out areas that you may want to talk about.
Yeah.
Contact information again.
So number at the office again, 978-691-5005. You can send me an email. It's jeff@talkmoneyradio.com. Engage us on Facebook. We've got a Facebook page there, and we've got information available there. And I actually posted last Monday, I posted the interview with Paul Cronin the Successful Transition Planning Institute, STPI. And it's a great interview, so check it out. Yeah. Thanks for tuning in today. We'll be back next Monday, same time, 10 o'clock. Thanks, Lou.
News Radio. I'm Dave Anthony. President Trump's first travel ban executive order caused controversy, prompted protests, and was blocked in court. Later this hour,
a long-awaited revision comes out. Fox's John Decker live at the White House.
The new executive order will temporarily halt America's refugee program and temporarily ban the entry of people seeking to come to the U.S. from six predominantly Muslim countries. Counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway.
And what's different about it has an effective date of March 16th. And there are the legal permanent residents were always excluded from it, but that's made much more clear now.
This order excludes Iraq from the U.S. travel ban. The new version also would no longer indefinitely bar Syrian refugees. Dave?
Now, John, a report just out says the FBI is investigating 300 people admitted into America as refugees in current counterterror investigations. Iran is on that list of six countries, and it's flexing its military muscle again.
Iran launched two short-range ballistic missiles over the weekend, U.S. officials tell Fox News. One missile successfully destroyed a floating barge approximately 155 miles out to sea on Sunday. The other missile missed its target on Saturday, but landed in the vicinity.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson at the Pentagon. Other recent tests have been condemned as violations of the Iran nuclear deal. North Korea also test-fired four ballistic missiles last night, condemned by the U.S. The Supreme Court has decided not to intervene yet in the transgender bathroom controversy. Fox's Evan Brown's on the case live.
Yeah, Dave, Gavin Grimm from Gloucester County, Virginia, was born female, now identifies as male, but was prevented from using the boys' room at his high school. The ACLU sued, citing Title IX, and eventually won on appeal. The Supreme Court was supposed to hear the case this month, but now says it won't, meaning the lower court's decision could stand or be reviewed. The decision comes up as the Trump administration rescinded Obama-era directives urging schools to allow such use of restrooms. Dave.
Evan on Wall Street, the Dow is down 93 points. Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Unexpected reactions to...
The civil authorities have issued a required weekly test for all of Connecticut, all of District of Columbia, all of Delaware, all of Florida, all of Georgia, all of Indiana, all of Kentucky, all of Massachusetts, all of Maryland, all of Maine, all of Michigan, all of North Carolina, all of New Hampshire, all of New Jersey, all of New York, all of Ohio, all of Pennsylvania, all of Rhode Island, all of South Carolina, all of Virginia, all of Vermont, and all of West Virginia beginning at 11:01 a.m. and ending at 12:01 p.m. Test message E pause open cap EAS feed configuration test message.
Counts.
All right, what do you think of this music? What do you think of this opening? If I had time to pick out some music, it's just, everyone knows here on the net here, NewEnglandTalks.net, that we had an automation crash this morning, so we're just putting stuff together, and I'm just grabbing music everywhere. This is what I have on CD.
Blues Brothers, man.
Blues Brothers.
There you go.
You like that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who can't not like it?
Yeah, well, I had to force my kids to watch it this summer.
Just the way I feel, you know.
We had a summer list of movies that you have to have that they hadn't watched. So we watched Caddyshack, we watched Blues Brothers, and we watched. We came up with about six or eight movies that I forced them to sit through.
Good job.
Airplane.
Ooh, here you go.
They loved all of them, though.
Back when OJ was a good boy. Yeah, that's Blues Brothers. That's my mantra, you know. I'm on a mission from God.
A mission from God. That's
mission
right.
Mission from God. Yes,
that's right.
So anyways, good morning, everyone. It's Ghost Chronicles, morning edition.
Yeah.
At least for a couple more weeks.
Yeah. Even though the music doesn't indicate it, yes, it's Ghost Chronicles, morning edition.
And that point, hello, we're live on 98.9?
Yes, 98.9 FM. Yep.
Maybe.
No, we're up on 9, as far as I know.
I had to go look.
As far as I know. There are certain things I know aren't working, but so, I think that's working.
So we'll say hello to all new 98.9 listeners.
Yeah, give us a call, 978-687-8005, 978-687-8005.
Because we're talking ghosts, paranormal, whatever you want. Whatever else you want. You know, dead presidents, who cares?
Dead presidents?
Sure.
Yeah.
They're ghosts, right?
Yeah. What do they do?
I don't know. I mean, Lincoln haunts the White House.
Yeah.
It's been seen.
You would think the former president won't even leave the White House. Why? Why would even, you know, if you're a president of the United States, wouldn't you just hang out at the White House? That would be a tough place to leave, I would think.
You know, I don't know what's going on with this stuff. We talked about this so many times. You know, there's so many billions and billions of people have died, you know. And
oh, yeah, you're going to hang on to that, huh? Do Catholics?
What?
I'm just laughing at you keep rejecting reincarnation. Don't Catholics believe in reincarnation, though?
It depends what reincarnation is.
Don't Catholics, isn't there a concept in Catholicism called the well of souls?
Yeah.
Doesn't that intimate that there are only a specific amount of souls?
That doesn't make sense. I'm
just saying.
Yeah, but the population keeps growing.
I'm not saying it makes sense.
The population keeps growing.
I understand.
Then they come up with some bull crap about, you know, those are new souls versus old souls.
Right.
And yeah, whatever. We just make everything fit whatever we want to preach. That's what we're going to fill in.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. It drives me nuts.
So, our souls, so you're going with the theory, and I don't disagree with you.
Wait, but how did I come up with any theory in 2 seconds?
You did, though. And you can correct me if I think I'm wrong. I think what you just said is there have been millions and billions of people.
That's correct. There was no theory. That's just plain proof.
So there are
facts.
Are there millions and billions of souls
floating
around?
Where do all their dead spirits go?
Yeah.
Right? That was my point. And
see, you mocked me. I was right on your point.
I never mock you, Lou. I'm astounded by your knowledge.
Astonished, yeah.
That too.
Astounded or astonished?
Maybe both.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I like playing with this stuff, so.
Where do they go?
I'm a conceptual guy.
We have some ghosts, right? I mean, there's reported sightings, but.
So is there like a Great Mall of America in the afterworld where. I mean, how many billions of people have been on the planet ever?
I don't know. That's the thing. That's what I was talking about. Where do they all go? They're going to go somewhere.
We got 6 billion now, maybe 7 billion. So chances are there's been 100 billion people, right?
If you're fatalist, you die, it's all over, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's no problem there. That solves everything, and there he goes.
Occam's razor.
Yeah, so there you go. And, you know, all these new people being born, and they're around, and they live their little lives, and bam, they're gone. That's it.
Right. Yeah. There's the theory that this is all...
That's a crappy theory, by the way.
Really?
Gives you no hope at all.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. I didn't know...
Kind of depressing.
I didn't know on what level you were calling it crappy, but you're right about that level of it.
Yeah, very depressing.
That's the theory that we are a bunch of chemical reactions.
Is this all this is?
Yeah, we're a bunch of... We're biology.
Yeah.
That there's nothing more than biology.
Yeah, but we say that, right? But and then I say, okay, dogs have no souls, and look what happens. We're down lower
I
know you don't. We're down lower in the biological chain, and people get all like passionate about it. So I mean, it's
okay. So this gets us to the big question.
Oh, here we go.
Gets us to the big question. It's at the heart of all of this. What is the soul?
I need coffee before I get into that.
What is the soul?
We don't know. It's,
yeah, I know.
It's what we are, basically, our essence, our energy, our thoughts.
What are we?
Patterns.
What is different the minute before death and the minute and the moment after death? If in fact
there's nothing in our body.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
I also think it's not a light switch like that. I think there's seconds or maybe even minutes where you're still around.
Well, there you go.
After you pass.
If you pass and there's no time in the afterlife, it goes a whole theory, too. So.
No, but I mean, I'm not sure. A person dies, you know, of old age. They die in a hospital bed.
Yep.
That second, those 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds after they die, mm-hmm. I'm not sure the brain stops.
No, it doesn't, I believe. Well, that depends what you define as death, of course.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know, brain death is one thing, so.
Well.
Body functions another. You can stop breathing, but still be not brain dead.
Right on this and on this scale, we get people revived from drowning. We get people revived from heartbeats stopping.
Yeah.
They remained alive.
Yeah.
The term is brought back to life, and I'm not sure that's accurate.
And in a way, it is. I think I think it's the return of the essence of who we are, our spirit, our soul, to the body, to this body we're in.
Yeah, is that the way it happened, or was your body a car rolling downhill when the heart stopped, and you managed to get the engine running again before?
No, I don't think
before
so.
It stopped
I think
rolling.
That's what it is because, yeah. I mean, we look at it in a larger view, and we look at astral projection, which mm-hmm. is actually the projection of our essence out of our body
right.
to somewhere else, you know, and so we can leave our body. So if you believe that, then what's the difference? It's not a big stretch that you leave your body after death the same way.
Let me ask you.
In other words, your body's broken down. You can't really function. So you've got to find another body to jump in. Maybe that's where all the souls come from.
Yeah.
Reincarnation is you just go and you jump into some baby that's being born.
Well, that's one of the theories, right?
Except there's so much of a connection between the baby and the mother. That it's I think it's a lot more than that. Because when a baby's born, by the way, when a baby's born...
You're talking hereditary things passed on?
No. Oh. I mean, there's a connection, period. Not hereditary. Let's not look at the body itself.
Yeah, but that soul goes back in at conception. That's
no,
the whole...
No. Wait. See, because, I mean, when a baby's born, he can't see.
Right.
You know that, right?
Sure.
And you know, we actually don't see images. You know that too, right?
Keep going.
Okay. All our eyes sees? All our eyes see?
All our eyes see.
All our eyes see is
frequency.
Motion, colors.
You're talking when we're born, or?
No, anytime.
Yeah,
what,
yeah.
In my life. Are all our eyes, right now,
right.
All our eyes see is motion.
Reflection.
No.
Frequency.
No.
Yeah.
Motion, lines, patterns, and color. That's all it sees. This is sent to the brain where it is interpreted. I can remember to put my teeth in the morning. But interpreted into what we believe we're seeing. So we don't really see what we think. Everybody says, I know what I see. Well, actually, you don't see anything. You're just interpreting what... Your brain is interpreting what they think.
Red isn't red.
It is.
Red is
once it's been established.
Your brain's interpretation
everything
of
is,
that frequency.
Everything is.
Yeah, exactly.
What you look like
right.
is
right.
interpreted by my brain.
Right.
Right? Right. You could be a woman and I wouldn't even know it. You could be Bruce Jenner. I only know it. I only know it because my brain has said, okay, I see this, and that's what it's telling me I'm seeing.
Right.
So, for instance, that's why a lot of people on bicycles and motorcycles get killed or hit in cars, is because they're not...
The brain doesn't register them.
Yeah, they're looking for cars. They're
right.
not looking for motorcycles or things. So
right.
it can be right in front of them, and they just don't see it. And we see that many times. How many times have you gone to a cabinet in a refrigerator, and you look for a jar of mayonnaise,
yep.
and it's right in the front.
Staring right at it.
And you don't see it.
Right.
It's the old thing. You can't see the forest from the trees. It's
yes.
a thing.
Right.
You know, it's the way it is.
As Jason Silva put it, all of life is modulating attention.
Ooh, I like that one.
Everything. Life is about modulating attention.
Yep.
Being able to... That's why you need a little bit of control over your brain. You can't... no one's in... People aren't in control of their brains enough. You gotta
mm-hmm.
you gotta take control because you have to be able to modulate your attention to be effective.
I agree.
Yeah.
So going back to my story about babies and everything else.
Yes.
So when babies are born, they really have no preconcept of anything.
Right. So they're just awash in stimulus.
So why did my headset just fall off?
I don't know.
My head shrink?
Some baby got upset at you.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Someone pull it off your head?
It's just there. I just went, anyway.
That's bizarre.
So, anyways, so baby has no preconception.
Right.
Yet, a baby recognizes their mother. And it's not through sight. It's through something else.
Sound.
Not necessarily.
Well, they hear in the womb. They, you know, they hear music. They hear their mother's voice. They respond to their mother's voice. At a certain point
yeah.
in their pregnancy, they will kick in response to their mother talking to them. Right. Even though they're just blobs of flesh. apparently they understand
globs of
their
flesh.
Mother's voice.
Okay, we
at a point.
Okay. So it's,
I know
it's
being sarcastic.
No, it's yeah. True. I mean, according to some people.
According to some people.
At least the people at Planned Parenthood. Oh, did I say that? Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Vile organization.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyways, so I think there's more in connection. I think it's more of the spiritual end of it, the essence end of it, where this energy, whatever it is more regular. Like your frequency thing. It's,
yeah. So you can't. That doesn't instinct and heredity doesn't explain that.
Heredity, not necessarily. Why?
Because every species has offspring.
Yes.
And most species, not all of them, but most species offspring are dependent at birth. Some less than others.
Yeah.
Humans more than most.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is some innate knowledge in a child or pup or baby or offspring of any species. There's some innate knowledge from the previous generations.
If the knowledge is passed through DNA.
Right.
DNA just might be markers of physical.
Yeah, animals know what to eat and where to eat and how to eat because it came through DNA. It came through.
Oh, I did it.
Instinct.
Or does it? I don't think that's absolutely true, because there are babies, if their mother's dead, they
die.
How
does a baby know how to breastfeed?
They're hungry, and they stick something in their mouth, and there you go.
Yeah, but how do they know that they need to move their mouth and swallow and do all this stuff? There's an innate instinct.
It's more mechanical.
Biomechanical, yeah, sure.
You know, because, I mean, you'll see.
But it's one thing to know you need to eat, and it's another thing to know how to eat or what to eat.
Okay. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, look at.
Well, we know it exists. It's not evidence, and it's not evident as much in human babies. I'll grant you that.
Yeah.
But think of any animal species you want, and the baby comes out, and all of a sudden they start eating stuff. Or they're basically walking around. They've. How do they learn how to do that? How do they learn, you know? Some species come out pretty self-sufficient.
Some, yeah. But a lot of them don't. I mean, in a lot of instances, a mother dies and the baby dies too because they can't take care of themselves.
Yeah, it's not capable of providing itself.
Right.
Yeah.
So there is some instinct.
But sometimes that's not because they don't know to do it. That they don't know they have to do it. It's because they can't. They're not capable. In other words, you know, a baby lion is a lion cub is not capable of hunting down a gazelle.
Mm-hmm.
So they know they have to, but they don't know how.
And you know that you talk.
Isn't
about
that funny? Because we're talking species, and there's an example. We've seen it in animals as well, where there's stuff that babies are born with that they have, and there's stuff that their parents teach them.
Yeah, right? But that being said, I mean, it's not as cut and dry as that. I mean, you have so many instances where you'll have a baby and there'll be predators, and the predators won't kill that baby. They've actually taken care of them.
Yep.
So what is that? I mean, if you're talking strictly instinct or DNA or whatever, then they should be eating that right off the bat. But in Iraq cases where they'll take care of it.
There's a Trump instinct.
A Trump instinct?
Trump card. There's a Trump instinct. Maternal instinct.
Maternal instinct. So that trumps.
You see the offspring. We see it all the time. We see it in houses. We see it with dogs and cats. You know, a dog will adopt a kitten and take care of the kitten, or a kitten will adopt a puppy or some other kitten from another litter.
Yeah, there's a lot of.
I don't know what it is, but you could argue it's just maternal instinct. There's an offspring. We do it as humans, right? We take in other species. You find a baby bird on the street that can't fly. You take it in and try to take care of it.
So is that something greater? Is that not necessarily is that passed on, but maybe it's part of this, of what we are connecting to something else.
I'll argue. I don't think you're necessarily wrong, but I'll argue the scientific end of it. I'll argue it's evolutionary. The strongest instinct among the strongest instincts you have to have to survive as a species, you have to have the instinct
mothers will kill their
to
children.
Survive.
Mothers will kill their children.
Yeah, sure, it happens in instances. But generally speaking, your instincts are to survive, to procreate, and to rear young, Those have to be, maternal instinct has to be one of the strongest instincts in a species for it to survive. Otherwise, the species doesn't survive, mm-hmm. unless it procreates at such a rate that it can eat its own young and everything, you know, mm-hmm. insects, rodents, that type of thing. You know? I would guess that
it's
maternal instinct...
stuff, though, really.
And think about it, right? Think about it even on the human level. It is fascinating stuff. Mm. Think about it on the human level. Why would a human mother... in the primal form, mm-hmm. when we're talking cavemen or whatever,
yep.
their primary instinct is survive. Why would a human mother jeopardize their own survival to take care of an infant?
Mm-hmm.
Think of what that was, taking care of an infant, right. human species in the past. You jeopardized your own survival. You gave them food. You stopped hunting. You had to take care of this baby. You had to protect them from predators.
And on the other note, why did the male protect the mother and the child?
Yeah. Good, great question.
They're not as connected as a mother and a child is, correct?
Oh, I'm going to disagree there, but yeah.
Oh, how,
you don't think fathers are as connected to their kids as mothers are?
No.
Okay.
Because, all right, you actually proved my case. I don't know if you proved that. You gave me evidence of the case.
Yep.
When you were saying about the baby in the womb and how it knew its mother because it heard its voice and everything else.
Yep.
Well, the father is unconnected from these two.
Oh, that's not true.
What?
I read to my daughter in the womb.
That's
I
nice.
Talked to my daughter in the womb.
That's
she,
nice.
She recognized my voice.
But did you
she
share a body with
no,
your daughter in the womb? No,
not.
You didn't. Well, that's the thing I'm talking about. There's got to be a greater connection. They not only they shared everything, their blood, their oxygen, everything. So, and you just mentioned.
I'll give it to you.
And you just mentioned to me previous that the maternal instinct trumps everything. And why would that be? Because of the huge
But then you reminded me that there's the paternal instinct as well. And by the way, the male of the species would be much better off.
But I'm saying the instinct is even greater than the mother's because there's no direct connection. But for them to do that, I mean, you know, there's got to be something in it.
I'm not going to plant a flag on that hill, but you're right. The male would be much better in a primitive situation.
Mm-hmm.
If survival is your main instinct, the male is much better off without the mother and the baby.
Exactly.
They're much more. There's
more
less
food to them.
Right. Exactly.
And what you know? What do they really do? Especially when they're just born. And,
so in primitive man, what was that? What was that desire? What was that need? What made them take that on?
Mm-hmm.
When they would have much, if they were
If it was all about them.
If it was all about them,
they'd
say the hell with this.
You know, they go, they'd have sex with a woman, and then that'll be it. Off my own. Okay, move on.
Yeah, baby, I'm looking for the next one.
Yeah, there you go.
So, I don't know, did that develop? And now I'm questioning what that was really like in primitive times. But we're told...
You don't remember?
No, I don't. We're told...
It's got to be in your DNA. Can't you just, like, call it up?
Yeah, maybe. Wouldn't that be great if we could just look into our own DNA? Mm-hmm. We're told that humans, even in the earliest forms, were social. They worked in groups. They you know, hunted. Even dogs hunt in packs, right?
Yep.
We're told we worked in groups. We're told that they took care of offspring. We're told that the men were hunters and gatherers, and the women, you know, did what they did, I guess, right? You know? Kept the home fires burning.
I don't remember too much, but yeah.
So, yeah, what is that instinct?
Yeah.
I mean, some people would say it's just survival. It's just.
But we also have the instinct to
Because, again, there's the instinct among those instincts I listed,
mm-hmm.
survival being one, if we want to rank them. Reproduction is two.
Yeah.
Again, the species that survives
has to. I
would
put them in particular order, but
reproduction is another one.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And as part of reproduction is maternal and paternal instinct, that family bond. Because the species doesn't continue unless that is prevalent and strong.
And this continues on. I mean, first we had these little clans, but then we started conquering territory, creating bigger and better places.
Well, competing for resources.
Competing for resources, right. But you're protecting your clan, your group. You conquer more territory, you can support more, and that's a natural thing that's gone through history.
Well, maybe we were just smarter at it, because let's look at some of these things. Let's look at lions and dogs that, as we said, hunt in packs, right? So the survival instinct is I need to eat. I need to kill this thing to eat. And if you're smart enough to determine, I'm better at killing this thing with two or three other people, or two or three other dogs, and splitting it up.
Yeah, but that's
maybe it's just
so
intelligence,
true.
And that's maybe humans so went to another level.
Lions are very territorial. The lion is, this male lion is in a pride, and they don't allow other lions. And then you look at...
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm a biologist. I don't know if lions hunt in packs or not, but dogs certainly do.
Well, they
at some point, the dogs figured out it's better for everybody.
But they all have
together.
Territories, even monkeys. Yeah.
Well, we do, too. We have territories, too.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
Man has developed that. I mean, not too long ago, I put a map on my Facebook page of Europe. I think it was from 1100 on. And you just watched that, and you saw the borders go crazy on it, right? And that's the way we are. We've all been conquered by other people at one time in our lives.
Right.
Well, not necessarily our lives, but our whatever our ancestry lives are.
Right.
And it's just a natural order of things, I think.
Competition for resources. That's survival. You attack other people because you think it's your survival.
One of the problems that we had with the Indians and Native Americans is that we set them up on reservations. We broke every promise. We broke everything, right? But that was never done. You really didn't give people that you conquered, and that's basically what we did, their own little things to deal with. That way, there's the problems with it. Everybody else was just beaten in submission like we were. You know, the Polish were beaten in by I don't know how many people along the way. And you know, the French, the Irish. I mean, you look at the maps and you see.
By the way, that's how the Native Americans got here. And they warred among themselves.
Exactly.
They killed each other off competing for resources.
But what we did.
I want that prairie. I want that bison herd.
What we did is actually create problems for us in the future. By doing this, if we had just do like man has normally done through the years and just assimilated everybody in there, it would have been a problem. And they say, oh, that's a terrible thing. That's not necessarily a terrible thing. It's the greater of the whole versus the individual. I mean, we still all have our cultures. I have my cultures. You have yours, right?
Yeah.
And it's still there. Plus, we get to share each other's cultures as well. You know, I like Chinese food.
Yeah, but the Native Americans weren't necessarily cooperative in that regard. I mean, understandable. We can justify it if we want to.
It happens through history. You know?
But people only assimilate when they're willing to assimilate. Look at what... we're going to get political now. Look at what's happening today, because everyone talks about America as an immigrant nation.
Yeah.
And it was built from immigrants.
Yeah.
It's not a nation of immigrants, because I'm not an immigrant. I'm an American. I was born here.
But
you're
not a Native American, so it doesn't count.
It damn well counts. I was born here. I'm an American, damn it. But it wasn't the immigrants who came here. When my ancestors came here from Italy, when they came here during the famine, from Ireland, they came here, flew American flags. You know, the Irish didn't need to learn English, but sort of. Immigrants learned English, became Americans. They came here and became Americans. They kept their culture. My Irish and Italian culture is alive and well in my family.
Didn't